This is Amber Ray.
And Rusty Tanton.
And you're listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network.
The show that wonders where its $180
is. The show that enjoys a nice game of hacky sack from time to time.
The show that is today brought to you by the letter O. The show that follows with complete and thorough prophylaxis.
The show that acts as a social lubricant.
The show that welcomes all voices, disembodied or otherwise.
It's a very different dynamic, this whole sex with a condom thing.
If you stick around long enough, you'll see the abrasiveness begins with the sodomite.
Most conferences that you go to with people in a room sitting in chairs and...
Do they have nudity?
No, unfortunately.
Nudity.
Awesome. The brief synopsis is about a group of about a dozen or so aborted fetuses who come back to life.
It's just that you've mentioned bacon so many times tonight in so many situations where I never thought bacon would
come up.
This is going to be the best podcast ever.
August 2nd, and I am at the Decatur Library with
Karen Abbott.
And you have written a book. What's the name of your book?
Sin in the Second City.
And what's it all about?
The book is the outrageous true story of the Everly Club, which was the most famous brothel in American history, and these two mysterious sisters who operated this brothel, and also the culture war that ensued when people were trying to shut them down.
And that was in Chicago?
Yes.
And what inspired you to start researching and writing this book?
My great-grandmother immigrated from Slovenia to the United States in 1905, and she brought with her sister. And one weekend, the sister went to Chicago and was never heard from again. So I wanted to see the circumstances that led to her disappearance, and it turns out that around the turn of the century in 1905, there were all these tales of disappearing girls. Which, you know, rumors about them being drugged and raped and kidnapped and sold into brothels, never to be heard from again. So those stories really captured my imagination. Once I found the Everly sisters, I sort of forgot about my relative. So
that's a fascinating story.
Yeah.
And I was, while you were talking during your presentation earlier, I was thinking so much of it sounds so familiar, you know, about... There's a culture war and even issues with immigration. America has an identity crisis, and it's just sort of like, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Would you say that that's sort of what you found or not?
Absolutely. I think it was one of the things that drew me to the book and the politics involved. I found that just as interesting as the Everly sisters and the brothel rules and the brothels operations. The fact that immigration, you know, back then it was Eastern and Southern Europe, today it's Mexico, but
right.
It's the same debate going on.
Yeah.
The National Purity Congress that was held in 1905 could be today's focus on the family.
Now we have purity balls.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Same word even.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And people just really, you know, people talking about how this country was founded on Judeo-Christian values. This is a Christian nation. You know, back then they were writing letters that we should not kowtow to the Jews and infidels from Europe.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, you can pretty much, of course people are a little bit more political. Correct today, but it's pretty much the same sentiment that this is a Christian nation, and anyone who suggests otherwise is un-American.
It's really interesting because people seem to appeal to a time sometimes, you know, that never actually existed, because they're making the same arguments and wringing their hands about the same things then that we are now.
Yeah.
And so just to clarify also, before I forget, what made the Everly Club distinct in Chicago and in the country?
Well, the Everly sisters had this idea of elevating the brothel industry, so they became a respectable profession. And to that end, they had a $50 entrance fee, and this is in an era when, you know, 50 cents would buy a three-course meal. You walked into the Everly Club, and they had perfume jets shooting into the air. They had Oriental rugs. They had a $15,000 gold piano. They had $650 gold spittoons. They had these very weird ethnically named rooms, like the Oriental Music Room, the Moorish Music Room, the Japanese Throne Room. They had 50 rooms in all, and it was sort of this ridiculous opulence. And also they catered to some of the most famous men in the world at the time, like Theodore Dreiser and Edgar Lee Masters, the poet, and Jack Johnson, the boxer, and John Barrymore, the actor, and many politicians and famous writers and athletes.
And everybody at the Chicago Tribune, apparently.
Yes, they all got anything for free.
Yeah.
So.
And that's interesting, too, because that was making me think of parallels with the D.C. Madam scandal now. And in your research, did you find anything, like, was there the same kind of stigma, more of a stigma? Was it sort of more accepted that these powerful, well-known men would visit the Everly Club? Or what was the difference or similarity there?
Well, I think the Everly Club was a status symbol, and you know, possibly the only brothel in history that would enhance a man's reputation rather than diminish it. You know, and the men who went to the Everly Club, one of the myths that the sisters built up around themselves was that men would say, "I'm going to get Everly tonight," which was then shortened to its bawdier idiom.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what they claim.
Right.
Of course, you know, get laid probably comes from the Bible to lie with, which is,
right.
But they sort of, you know, if you want to infer that came from our name, you know, they played off the pun. I mean,
yeah.
If the pun already existed in its infant form, they helped popularize it. So it was actually absolutely a status symbol. I mean, if a man was strange to them, he had to come with a letter of referral. They were very strict about who was allowed to enter the doors.
And what years was it open?
1900 to 1911.
And what ultimately led to the Everly Club closing?
Well, the reform movement was gaining steam. There were several ministers and lawyers across the country that started really mobilizing. One of the things that really affected the culture war was the passage of the Mann Act in 1910. The Mann Act was this piece of legislation that said, you know, you can't transport a woman across state lines for immoral purposes. And unfortunately, nobody defined what immoral purposes was, which really led to a lot of problems. The government ended up using this to persecute men like Jack Johnson, who dared to date white women, and Frank Lloyd Wright, who had a mistress. And, you know, the interesting thing about the Mann Act was that it spawned the development of the FBI. Before the Mann Act, the FBI was just this sort of low-level government bureaucracy that dealt with minor crimes. And then after the passage of the Mann Act, the whole purpose of the FBI was to deal with white slave charges. So once that was passed and there was seminal legislation across the country, you know, the battle was almost reaching its head. And the Everly sisters were the main target because they were the shining symbol of open and protected vice known throughout the world.
So was it legal to operate a brothel? I mean, it seems like, you know, you talked about how brothels had doctors often who were dishonest, but in the Everly Club's case, they were not dishonest. And all these employees, all this opulence, I mean, was it legal, or was it sort of one of those things where it was just sort of, you know, loopholes or people looked the other way?
No, it was technically illegal. But it was a completely necessary, people accepted it as just
right.
Part necessary evil. And the whole idea, the way cities operated. I mean, this is the interesting thing. Like, you think of a prostitute today, and you think of the sort of drug-addled streetwalker, you know, toiling under the menacing gaze of her pimp and really working by herself. But back then, prostitution was this viable, invisible industry like the auto industry, and it was madams, there were madam networks, and every city with a population over 100,000 had a red light district.
Mm-hmm.
And cities tolerated this because they thought if you kept the brothels all in one concentrated area, it would be less likely to seep out into respectable neighborhoods and sort of ruin the rest of the city. And also if you keep brothels in the segregated district, as they called it, you know, respectable society women would be safer from rape because any man who was so inclined would probably just go to the red light district rather than prey on the nicer neighborhoods. So it was considered a necessary evil, and you know, so it thrived, you know, with municipal indulgence.
And that's another debate that's still going on now, you know, with regard to things like, you know, adult stores and strip clubs,
yeah.
And things. People don't seem to be as bothered as long as they're over there,
yeah,
not in my backyard.
Yeah,
exactly. And when it becomes part of quote-unquote respectable society, people start freaking out a little more.
Yeah.
There's just so many parallels. It's really interesting. And the stereotype of, you know, the drug-addled prostitute now is also not true. You know,
yeah.
There are all different kinds of
right.
sex workers. And one thing that was interesting that you mentioned was the Friendly Friends. Was that the,
yeah.
the name of the group?
Yeah.
What were they?
It was this, like, labor union for madams. I mean, they networked. Like, they all, if they liked each other, they looked out for each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the Everly sisters decided to set up shop in Chicago, before they did that, they went on a tour through red light districts throughout the country, conferring with the premier madams in each city and getting advice and getting ideas. And it was this sort of a unionized way of communicating with each other and making sure that their business was operating in the way they wanted it to. The Friendly Friends was specific to Chicago, but it was, you know, so it was a smaller version of the larger national network that was operating at the time.
And now there are sex workers' rights advocates who are trying to push unionization.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess I mean, I had never known that something like that took place 100 years ago. That's really interesting. So just to bring this to sort of a more local focus, a friend of mine had a question. I don't know if you know anything about this, but he said he heard that around the same time period, Rome, Georgia, actually had one of the most well-known brothels in the state. But if you ask any locals about it now, they'll deny it up and down. And he was wondering if you'd come across anything about that.
No, I did come across one Atlanta thing. Atlanta, you know, had a red light district like every other city. Mm-hmm. And when the Levy district was getting attacked, Atlanta's district was getting attacked as well. The efforts to do this were led by a group called Men in Religion Forward or something to that effect. And one prominent madam named Nellie Bushnell was so distraught by this that and the fact that her brothel was about to close that she plunged a dagger into her heart.
Oh my God.
And it made national news.
How dramatic.
Yeah.
And that was in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
Where was Atlanta's red light district located?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know that. But the thing about the Nellie Bushnell was, I actually only knew that because it was picked up in a Chicago newspaper. Wire Reports reported it in Chicago. So,
okay.
But I don't know. I'd love to know where Atlantis was, though. I probably live in it now.
Midtown, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe you could do research and eventually write a book about Atlanta's red light district. What's your next project that you're working on? Another book now, right?
Gypsy Rose Lee and New York. I'm interested in Gypsy Rose Lee for many of the same reasons. I was drawn to the Everly Sisters. Knew these two women who were sort of self-made,
right.
And she was self-made as well. She's admittedly that she wasn't pretty, she didn't have any talent, but she became the most publicized woman in the world.
Right.
And you know, she operated against this really dramatic backdrop in New York City, where the political climate was shifting and America was sort of entering a new age.
Very cool. Well, I can't wait to read the book because I just now got it. and so as soon as I finish Harry Potter, I'm gonna read this book.
I'll be second to Harry Potter. That's fine.
You know, I'm halfway through. So,
yeah.
Do you have anything else that you want to add and give us your website address and all that kind of
stuff? Yeah, my website address is www.sininthesecondcity.com. There's my email on there is Karen@sininthesecondcity.com. So I welcome anyone to write to me and let me know what you think of the book. And thanks for spreading the word. It means a lot to a first-time author. And
sure.
You know, so I'm really excited. People seem to like the Everlys as much as I do. So it's gratifying.
Thanks, Karen.
Yeah, thank you, Amber.
The song you heard in this podcast was Flux by Drop Trio, available only on Magnatune.com.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you have a question, comment, or drunken rant, leave us a voicemail by calling 678-389-9441. Who knows, it might be featured in a podcast. You can also email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com.